ever noticed in the Ten Commandments we heard just a few moments ago? And I never had noticed this, quite honestly. There are no punishments. There's no punishments attached to them, right? They don't say, if you do this, then, you're going to go to hell. Or then you're going to suffer damnation. There is no if-then duality at all. There isn't any penalty language written into this legal code. That's not the way with secular law. The penalty for breaking a law generally becomes part of the statute and legislation. So, for example, if you're caught speeding, something that's never happened to me, you will pay a fine. And if you have been speeding so egregiously, not only will you be penalized by the law, your car insurer will penalize you too by adding points to your record and increasing your car insurance. Oh dear. If you repeatedly drive too fast, the law has even stricter consequences for repeat offenders. But the Ten Commandments have no penalties. You can say, you know, secular law has penalties only to the extent that the offender is caught. If you are anything like me, then the one or two times, 5 or 10 times you've gotten a speeding ticket in your life cannot begin to compare with the number of times you've gone just a wee bit over the speed limit. It's only fair. I earned those speeding tickets. Speeding laws need to be enforced for the safety of us all, especially our children. Secular laws need to be enforced. What about sacred law? Many people view God as a stern judge who's keeping track of all the times we trip up, sort of a reverse Santa Claus, making a list, checking it twice, only not to give us presents, but some kind of eternal punishment. A lovely way to challenge this persistent, ugly notion of God. The next time you encounter it, talking, conversation with somebody, just point out there is no penalty attached to breaking any of the commandments. God is not a stern, ugly judge. Rather, says Bible scholar Terence Fredheim, Old Testament laws are a gracious gift of God for the sake of life. For life, health, and well-being, for the sake of humans who of necessity must live in community with one another, hopefully in peace, not murdering each other, stealing from each other, involved in sexual impropriety with each other. These sacred laws take into account what all humans need to live the best possible life, not just Jewish people to whom the law was originally given, and not just to Christians who have inherited the law through our Jewish brother, Jesus. We Judeo-Christians are not the only ones with sacred law, of course. Principles, moral guidelines. All religions have these. And, you know, we people of faith, religious faith, tend to have so much in common that often these things overlap. When sacred insight is found in one religion but not another, That's a fabulous opportunity to be exposed to what they know that we don't know. For example, there's a principle in Taoism that says everything eventually becomes its opposite. Yeah, I find that very intriguing. Everything eventually becomes its opposite. I haven't found that notion in the teachings of Jesus. That doesn't mean it's wrong. God's introduction to the Ten Commandments, or Ten Words as they're called by our Hebrew brothers and sisters, reads like personal correspondence. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of slavery. That's what God says to anyone who finds unending love. Unending love, that's another name for God. I am the Lord your God. I am love. And I have led you out of slavery. You're free. You're free. Go and enjoy it. Unending love is simply a different name for God. We could give God many names. Non-stop forgiveness. Breath of life. I like this one. The one who, when laughing, creates stars. God's intro to the Ten Commandments keeps them personally oriented. I am the Lord, your, singular, your God. It's personal. Following the commandments is a matter of relationship, not of enforcement. Just as there are no penalties associated with breaking one of these laws, neither is there an enforcer. There is only our personal commitment to a fair and fairly easy moral code meant to benefit everyone, including me, the one who is keeping the code. Many Christians don't realize that the Ten Commandments are provided twice in the Bible. The first instance is what we read this morning from Exodus. But there's a second one in Deuteronomy. Deutero means second law specifically. And there are two interesting changes. They're very slight, but they're very important in that second version. So the last commandment in the Exodus version puts wife on a list of property. Not to be coveted. It says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor as property, including your neighbor's wife. In the Deuteronomy version, the second version, wife is exchanged with house and given her own commandment. In that text, the ninth commandment reads, neither shall you covet your neighbor's wife. Period. End of commandment. And the tenth one reads, in Deuteronomy, neither shall you desire your neighbor's house or field or male or female slave, ox, la, 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 la. Property. There are still just 10 commandments in that second version. They've combined the first two. Professor Fredheim points out that this change means the commandments were not believed to have been chiseled into stone. Get it? They were chiseled in stone. But they were understood to be open to adaptation in new times and places. The wifely change from property to individuality probably reflected a changing role for women in that culture. The sensibility of the covenant, the commandment, was changed. The other difference is really cool. It comes in the Sabbath commandment. In Exodus, the motive for observing a Sabbath is based on creation. That commandment reads in part, "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day." That's Exodus, recalling the creation. God rested on the seventh day, and so should we. However, in Deuteronomy, the motive for keeping the Sabbath is justice. It reads, "Remember, you were a slave in Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." That's how the commandment reads in Deuteronomy. The Exodus version emphasizes Sabbath as blessing. Creation, blessing, rejoice, rest. The Deuteronomy version emphasizes it as an institution of justice because not only were you to rest, so was everything else. Your slaves, your animals. The Sabbath was the first fair labor law. Justice. The law is given for the sake of the best life possible. It serves to create a stable, flourishing, and life-enhancing community. God's words surrounding the giving of the law, "I am the Lord your God," shows it's not arbitrary, but is given for our good always, that God might preserve us alive. Those are words from Deuteronomy. The gracious purposes of God show that the law is fundamentally a gift and not a burden.